Hey everyone, it's Michelle.
And Brayden.
And this is Spooky Shit. This week we're going to be telling you about some unidentified killers. I'm going to start out by talking about Mr. Cruel.
And then I'm going to talk about the Flat Tire Murders.
Warning, this episode may contain graphic details. Listener discretion is advised.
But before we get started on that, how's it going?
I just
were you laughing at my face whenever you said it. Whenever he said the murders, he never fucking tells me who he's talking about. I tell him who I'm talking about, and then I'm just surprised every week whenever he says who he's saying. So I'm like,
true.
I never want to drive again. I could already tell you before hearing your story. I'm good. But yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I've never heard of that before.
Me either.
You're like, I didn't even look it up. I'm just going to read it straight from the wiki while we record.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But yeah, how's it going? We should start by saying you're not using your normal mic right now.
Yeah, so if it sounds bad, it's because I'm literally using my cousin's gamer headset.
Yeah, this is better than we're literally recording this Saturday night. While he's in LA, he'll get to that soon, I'm sure, because his mic wasn't working yesterday, and this gamer headset is way better than the mic that he was using yesterday. Yesterday was just, like, so bad that at first I was like, should I just record with Robert instead? Like,
it sounded horrible.
Yeah, it was not good. This sounds, like, way better. So it probably sounds bad to you guys, but to me, I'm like, not too shabby.
Compared to what we were working with?
Yeah. Yeah. You guys don't know how good this is right now.
We came up to LA because my mom has been wanting to go. I don't know if you've ever been, but it's this place called The Boiling Crab.
I don't think so.
But it's basically... You're right. I'm not sure it is. But basically, it's like a seafood place where they literally like put like paper on the table. And they give you, like, basically a bag full of, like, corn, like, basically...
And crawfish and stuff?
Yeah, crawfish, lobster, whatever you want, you get to choose. And they give you the bag, and you can, like, go ham. They give you a bib and gloves if you want it.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, my mom has been, like, wanting to go, because we haven't been there in a while. And my sister, the baby, the 11-year-old... She's never, like, we did go when she was, like, tiny, but she doesn't remember.
Yeah, she was, like, small.
Yeah, and it is a little on the pricier side. So, yeah, we were, like, making plans to go there, and my aunt actually was, like, you know what? There's actually one up here that's, like, way more affordable, and, like, you know, she's, like, she's, like, you know, my house is open, we can come back and just, you know, hang out at our house.
Cool.
We were, like... we were like, sure, why not? And last night, we're all like super tired because last night we actually didn't go to bed till like 2 a.m.
Really?
Yeah.
That's some Michelle shit. Dude, that's when I was just getting started.
For real. Well, because, yeah, we were supposed to record yesterday and the mic was just not working. Well, the mic works fine. It was more the...
Yeah, we think it's the cord connecting it, because he, like, will talk and it lights up like it's working, but his computer refuses to acknowledge that there's a mic here.
Yeah, it was weird, but, and then the only other mic I guess I have was the one connected to my Beats, which is, like...
Was not ideal.
Not at all.
That's the one that I'm like, you guys don't know. It could have been real bad.
Yeah. I was like, or do you remember the, like, way back when COVID first started and we were doing
it? We got you the phone microphone?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was not good. No one should go back and listen to our first episodes just because we recorded for 2 months and it was like, COVID happened. Your guys' mics are shit. I'm the only one who sounds good.
True. But, yeah, it's been a long week in general. I didn't have any clients this week.
That's unfortunate. I mean, when you've had the best, it's like, what's next? You cut my wig bangs, and that was, like, the peak of your career.
True. No, but yeah, it's really cool, because actually one of the educators at school, you know, because everything that happened, you know, we lost Chris your and classmate. Stuff like that. Yeah, my classmate. And they're having, like, a lot of fundraisers. But basically one of the educators, he's actually a barber and an esthetician.
Oh, wow.
And also a massage therapist.
Okay, baller. A triple threat.
Basically. But he, like, pulled through and, like, called some of his massage, like, therapy. Like, I don't know if they work for him or just good friends. Mm-hmm. But he got them to, like, volunteer to come to our school. And they gave us all, like, a Swedish massage.
That's so fucking nice.
Which is, like, oh, yeah, it was amazing. Like,
it's because they're going to get you guys hooked. And now you're going to keep scheduling appointments with them.
But yeah, it was like really nice. We're all like super grateful that, you know, he went out his way to do that. Yeah. So that helped. And then I actually had a job interview. When was it? Thursday.
You did?
I did. Yeah, I went to school that day and was like, oh, you know, I'm leaving early because I have this job interview. Mm-hmm. And also it's my mom's birthday and like I wanted to go spend the day with her. Well, I got the call on Wednesday at school. And it was the manager, you know, asking me questions about my experience. And I was like, yeah, and I'd be saying basically a lot. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I did notice, and I try to cut it out a lot.
I've noticed, too, that I do
say it a lot. You used to say, so I guess, and now you say basically. Because it'd be funny, because sometimes, like, you'd be saying, like, these stories that are, like, factual. And you'd be like, yeah, and I guess they, like, found a body. You guess? No one knows for sure, but, like, I guess they did.
You're right. I know.
You stop saying that as much. I thought that one was fucking funny, though, because you always sound so hesitant. You're like, probably.
It's like, I don't want to be wrong.
I know, right? But leave it up in the air so no one could say anything if I'm incorrect.
Well, yeah, so he basically, there I go again.
You can't say it now.
I cannot say it, you know?
Spooky shit drinking game. Take a shot every time he says, no, don't take a shot. Actually, you die. Take a sip of alcohol every time he says, basically.
Damn.
And time I bully him. We'll get drunk real fast.
Yeah. We're barely like 8 minutes in, bro.
Yeah. I know, right?
But yeah, he just asked me questions and was like, oh, you know, when can you come in? And I was like, fuck it. Like tomorrow. And
right now.
Like, yeah. Almost. And then, yeah, he told me, like, to work for you. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll just leave school early. But, yeah, Thursday came and I went. And, well, the job interview. I was super nervous just because I hate job interviews.
Job interviews suck.
Yeah, they do. It's so bad. Like, I just hate them.
If you don't even want the job that bad, they suck.
Yes, they do. And just because I hate how nerve-wracking it is, you know?
Exactly.
But, yeah, basically the whole day I was just like, trying not to think about it and not get in my head about it, because I do tend to do that, and then it like scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And then it makes me more nervous to the point where I start stuttering.
Oh, and, no.
Like, you know what I mean? So yeah, the whole day I just kind of blowing it off and like trying not to think about it.
Good.
And then yeah, the time came, I went, I dressed nice, and yeah, I was interviewed by two managers. One of them I had talked on the phone with that day before.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was like the manager. Well, would basically be my manager.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And yeah, they just asked me questions and reiterate what I had told one manager already about my experience. And then he gave the one that would be my manager.
Your future manager?
My future manager. He was like, well, I just want to give you a tour and dump a lot of information on you.
That seems like, promising.
Right? Like, but yeah, he said, like, you know, there's just going to be information overload while the tour is going on. And he was honest and he was like, I want you to know all of this and, like, see what you're going to get into. And for you to decide if you want to do it.
Okay, so sounds like they offered you the job low-key already.
Low-key.
They're already like, okay, so it's up to you. What you think?
Sort of. Because, during the tour, he did give me so much information that I honestly did get a headache from it. Just because it was so much. And, like, honestly, I mean, I don't know shit about it.
It's just, like, stuff that if you work there, you'll naturally figure it out over time, though.
For sure. And he was very honest about that. He said, like, honestly, the first few days, like, you probably won't do anything hands-on. Like, the first few days, you're just gonna, like, watch a senior, like, worker. Basically watch them and take notes.
Oh, damn.
And then eventually, after a few weeks, he said you'd get, like, hands-on. And instead of watching the senior officer or whatever, they'd be watching you do it.
Oh, God, that sounds scary.
And I was like, oh, shit. But yeah, it was a lot of information. But basically, it's there. Fuck, dude. I need to find another word.
Basically? I didn't even realize. Also, I'd like to say two things real quick. There's an animal outside being loud right now, if anyone hears it. Second thing, we're dog sitting my sister's dog Shadow right now. So if you hear any weird noises, it's him. He's a very clingy dog. So he's just kind of like wandering around by my desk and licking my leg. So if you hear that, sorry.
That's funny. But yeah, it's a company and they make circuit boards.
Oh, okay. It's like factory-ish almost.
Yeah, it's a lot of machines. And I guess what my job would be is just feeding like a panel of a bunch of like circuits through the machine. And just, it's a lot of like paying attention to detail because you have to like check it, make sure it's like within the specs of it all. And he was like reiterating,
yeah, you got it.
Yes, reiterating that just how that's like super important. And I was like, well, I'm pretty good at that.
No shit.
Yeah. And just like how it's really important for the circuit boards to be like within the specs because like it needs to fit in like tight spots and stuff like that. And I was like, that makes sense.
Yeah. Sounds pretty chill.
Yeah. I mean, it did seem chill. And it doesn't look like they really have a dress code.
Oh, that's good.
Which is cool. It was a lot of older people though.
Oh, yeah?
There wasn't many young people that I saw. But yeah, and they were also true. But yeah, they were telling me how like you could make a career out of it as well.
Oh,
I was like, that's interesting.
If the barbershop doesn't work out though, right? I know you prefer that.
Yeah, for sure.
But is this full time or part time?
It would be full time. It's actually like 6 minutes away from school as well.
Oh, that's good at least.
But I would have to switch back to night school because I would be working in the morning.
Yeah. They haven't offered you it, have they?
No, he told me that I should hear him from him the latest Tuesday.
I'm surprised they weren't like, so you're starting tomorrow.
Well, no, because they're actually closed on the weekends, which I'm like, that's
ideal.
Perfect. Yes. Perfect for me.
Yes.
But yeah, so that went well, and then we ended up, I went to the doctor's office to get some blood work done, and then went home, and we got ready, and we took my mom to Cheesecake Factory.
Cute.
So that was cool. I also had my aunt, the one that likes to say certain comments.
Misgender you?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You beat her ass.
No. I would never. I can't even, like, bring myself to correct her. Just because, low-key, she kind of scares me. Like, it's kind of, I'm just very unsure in how she would react, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she's, like, low-key just very openly disrespecting you. So, it's like, I feel like potentially you could even tell her and she'd just be like, well, I'm not going to do that.
Sort of.
I don't know her.
We actually had a conversation about it with, Well, not me and my aunt. I
mean, oh, okay.
My mom and I and my sisters and Alaris.
Yeah.
That's actually why we went to bed really late yesterday was because...
Oh, really?
We were just like... Well, because my wife's cousins came over and, you know, they were drinking and we were just hanging out. And then they ended up leaving, I don't know, maybe around 10. And we just stayed out there, like, just continued talking. And
that's true.
We actually got, like, pretty like deep talk.
Oh, yeah,
like really deep talk, like we were literally all crying like that
deep. Oh.
And it's just, you know, we finally, I guess, communicated in a way that we never really did.
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, I feel like we are a little closer because of it now. But we did touch a little bit on that because I was like, you know, we were just talking about like life experiences and stuff like that. And I did touch base on that because I'm like, yo, what's up with like my aunt? Like,
yeah,
she's just straight up like not even trying. And then we did kind of go back and forth, and because my mom's very much so like tough love, you know, like, you know, then if you don't like it, tell her. And then like, which I'm like,
you're not confrontational at all.
I am not at all. Which
you're
is
like,
why
I will never correct her in my life.
I mean, I will try if I build up the courage, but
in
I'm
5 years from now, you will
correct, right?
You'll show up with your full beard and be like, hey, can you stop?
But you know what? I've heard stories of like family members that like purposefully like misgender someone. And it's funny because they end up looking like the dummies. Because, like, you know, imagine
misgendering people don't realize
someone
that
with
you're
a
trans.
Full-ass beard. Yeah.
It's like, the fuck?
Like, the fuck is wrong with you? That's clearly a dude, you know?
That's hilarious, honestly.
But yeah, we just got into a really, like, deep conversation about it. And she thought that as well. Like, if you feel disrespected, then, like, do something about it. And I see how, you know, I guess it does look like disrespect, but I was like, I know she loves me, and I know she's not disrespecting me, and I don't feel disrespected. It just hurts.
Yeah.
You know? Especially, and I told my mom straight up, and I was like, it just honestly, like, hurts, especially because, like, I have family members from Mexico that literally are trying, because my mom also tried to say like we never see her, and I was like, there's literally like family in Mexico that I haven't seen in like a bunch of years that are literally like commenting on Facebook. Yeah, like they're trying, like even on like Facebook, you know, they're like using my correct pronouns, which I'm like, that's not really a good excuse, you know, they don't see me but they're still trying. And she was like, well, yeah, but that's because they have this person who's basically holding them accountable. And I was like, that's cool.
I don't know if this is a hot take, but I feel like your mom should be holding her accountable. Because is that her sister?
Exactly. And that's what me and my sister were basically trying to like get my mom to understand. Because I was like, honestly, like my sister like basically had my back. Like,
oh, good.
She, like we were crying and she was like, yo, like, I think about it this way. If I, she's like, if I had a kid and he was transgender or she was transgender and like Brayden, for God forbid, like didn't accept her, like I
would.
That'd
be fucking like, hilarious. Right? You're the one who doesn't accept the trans kid. But you're like, just, I want to be the only one in the family.
We were just trying to like put the example, you know? And then she was like, I would definitely be like, hey, yo, like, you know, can you just try at least?
Yeah, it's just like protecting your kid, basically.
Basically. Yeah. But and my mom did get it at the end. It was the way she was thinking differently, you know?
Yeah.
She was, I guess she didn't know how much was hurting me that she misgenders me.
Hmm.
And she did get upset because she was like, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's my bad for not communicating.
But yeah, going on, now she knows. So
yeah,
she
now
can
she
start
knows.
Doing that.
But yeah, so I mean,
and I
was
like, I don't
want to
sound mean to your mom, but why isn't she doing it? You can tell I was like treading carefully there.
No, yeah, and that's what we were trying to like tell her, because I'm like, you know, I definitely understand what she pushes us to be in, like tough love, and like, because I appreciate that, because
standing
I
up for yourself,
standing up for myself and thick skin, which, you know, out there, like, I definitely like, I don't really get fazed by much by like people, you know, it's more, it stings, I guess, or hurts more, or I can't really take it as well when it's those really close to me.
Yeah, your own family.
My own family. That's when
actually,
it's like harder for
me. No, I feel the same way sometimes, like hearing people in my family say homophobic shit, just like fucked up stuff, and like my siblings don't say anything, and I'm like, are you, I'm sitting right here, dude. Mm-hmm. Really? Come on.
That's when it like really stinks, but
I know I'm like, you're gonna say anything?
Yeah, for the most part I like totally like don't get fazed by like strangers. Yeah. And that's what my mom's argument was, basically, like, you know, be tough, like I told you before you came out that like you're gonna have people that were gonna accept you and you're gonna have people that were like, whoa.
Yeah.
And she was like, too bad for them.
I think a good way of thinking about it is you should know how to stand up for yourself, but you shouldn't always have to. Sometimes people should be able to help you.
Yes.
Because that's exhausting for you to be the only one saying something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
how
even,
that talk.
Me too. It was definitely like helpful because even like my wife Alaris was like, you know, she was trying to like back me up as well, and it was like, you know, I wanted to like, she wanted to like say something to my aunt, but also this aunt is just like, it's scary because you don't know how she would react.
Yeah,
It's
it's
just,
more you guys are like, all right, we need the mama protection right now. You
yeah,
need
so.
to go do this.
Yeah, just 'cause I'm not saying like I don't know. She just my wife was like basically scared to say it in a way that she would feel disrespected. So that's why she just like stayed quiet too. But it obviously bugs Alaris a lot too.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Like she literally like will turn to me and give me looks, and I'm just like I know,
I
it's
know.
'cause she knows it hurts me. And with certain like family members, she definitely like it will be like, hey, no, it's he. And like they I guess do have that mutual level respect though that she knows she could like tell them and they won't they'll just be like oh thank you like oh
Yeah.
my bad thank you
Most certain people, it's more awkward, and she's like,
yeah
I
for sure
100% feel that.
but yeah so we ended up staying up until like 1:30 in the morning
Nice.
just talking about anything and everything and just
That's
really
good.
yeah it was really nice 'cause we hadn't communicated like that in like a long time, and I think it was needed.
Now you're on the same page.
Yeah, we are.
That's good.
Yeah, we all cried, but you know, we made up. I mean, it wasn't like we were fighting or anything. It was just we
Emotional.
emotional, just because we were all, I guess, holding back a lot. But yeah, it was a little bonding moment.
That's cute.
Yeah, we ended up getting ready for bed, and then we finally like went to bed around 2.
Jeez Louise.
And then, yeah, we were supposed to leave the house at 9
What time did you
this
leave?
morning. We ended up leaving around the house, I think around like 10. But we ended up stopping to this new place, this new coffee shop in Escondido. It's called James Coffee. It's actually pretty good. But we stopped there and it was like really packed. So it
Oh
like
gosh,
took
that
like,
even longer.
yeah, it took like half an hour maybe. And then my
Jeez.
sister really wanted Starbucks. And so, 'cause she, it was, you know, it was a real coffee shop. So it's like,
She
you
hates
know,
supporting local businesses.
no, not at all.
I'm just kidding.
She just likes like sweeter coffee.
Yeah, like me with
So,
my half cream or half coffee.
same.
Starbucks doesn't
So,
make that shit. Or Starbucks does make that shit.
no,
Other
I was
places
like, what do you
don't.
mean?
That's all they make.
So yeah, we ended up going to Starbucks as well, and then we had to stop at my sister's work because she had to drop something off. And then we finally left, and I think we got over here like at 1.
Jesus, you're supposed to be here like 10:30.
Yeah, we were supposed to get here like around 11.
That's so unfortunate. At least you got there. You
Yeah,
got
we
there in the
got
end.
there, we got here, we hung out for a little bit at my aunt's house, and then we went to go eat at the it's actually like a knockoff version of the Boiling Crab. I
Oh,
think it's
sick.
called the Blazing Crab.
I love how similar it is. Was it good?
Yeah, it was actually really good.
Hell yeah.
It was nice. And then yeah, we like went around shopping, walking. We got back not too long ago. Now they're just chilling, drinking,
Dope.
bonding.
Sounds chill.
But yeah, I'm like still tired as hell though.
Oh, yeah.
Just didn't really rest, and then I think we're going to work tomorrow, so I'm like, fuck.
Big yikes.
Yeah, that's what's been going on with me. What about
Been
you?
busy? A few things actually. I'm gonna try to go through it quickly because it's my story's actually kind of long this week. But first off, Comic-Con, which I think you went downtown. So I'll ask you about in a second. We went to Comic-Con for 2 days and it was really fun. We didn't go to any panels. We mostly just like walked around the convention center, and Robert kind of ruined the vibe by being like, you know, Comic-Con's just kind of like a giant mall or swap meet. And I was like, please don't say it like that, because that's just gonna destroy my image of what Comic-Con is. So next year, maybe we're actually gonna look at doing panels or something else to mix it up. But it was cool. Like, I dressed as Marin from My Dress Up Darling the first day, and people were like asking to take pictures of me and stuff. And that's how you know you got a good cosplay. People stop you and are like, okay, get a picture of you. And
True.
yeah, I didn't buy anything the first day. We stayed for like probably like 4 hours. We didn't want to stay all day because we were going 2 days. that's also the benefit of living in San Diego, is that you don't have to be like, fuck, I just flew like from 1200 miles away. I have to stay all day to make it worth it. So yeah, we didn't stay too long. And then we went back the next day and we got like this beautiful print from the Avatar. I need to send you a picture of it because you'd really like it. It has like every single element in Avatar The Last Airbender like incorporated somehow. Like I was looking through it and I was like, oh, I bet they don't have everything. I bet they don't have like that cabbage guy. And then what do I see? A tiny little man looking upset about cabbages in the picture. And I'm like,
no way.
It's so cool. It's so pretty. You're going to like it. I'm going to send it to you later. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. The second day I dressed as Dior from Spy Family and more people asked for pictures of me. And I was like, yes, of course. I love all my fans. It was really cool, very chill. We stayed even less long the second day. I think we're only there like 3 hours. That's why I forgot that you're gonna go, but I didn't feel that worried once I saw you went about not texting you, because I was like, oh, you probably like got there as we were leaving.
Probably. We got there pretty late actually.
Did you have fun? Did you do anything cool?
No, it was actually pretty whack this year because
there wasn't too much going on outside.
Yeah, there wasn't that much. And I feel like because we got there so late, it was just kind of whack. Like, we ended up literally just, we walked around the whole thing, and it was pretty whack because, like, everything was, like, closing already. Or not closing, but they were cutting off the lines. Because, like, I think for the, what was it? I think it was a horror one.
So then American Horror Story thing?
No.
I don't know. I'm not sure. We didn't walk around outside too much because it was warm.
I don't remember what it was for, but they told us that they cut the line because the last person, they weren't going to get in until 8:30, basically, p.m., Jesus and it was, Christ. Like, 1.
So now you know next time, go early.
Yeah. Yeah, so we just ended up walking around, and then we were like, yeah, this is kind of whack, so
yeah,
we ended up leaving early.
I feel like I didn't see as many crazy cosplays as I normally do, either. I saw some really cool ones, but maybe it's just because my cosplay was actually nice for once. I was like, I want to see more.
Yeah, we did see, because we walked right in front of the convention center.
Oh, perfect.
We did see, like, some pretty good cosplays. We were like, wow.
Oh, I wanted to ask, did you see the protesters? Were they still there?
Oh, yeah.
Was there a lot of them?
No, not as previous years.
Yeah, so every year at Comic-Con and any big event in San Diego, any like big city, I feel like, Robert said that they've shown up at like half marathons. These homophobic people always show up, and like it's like the super intense Christians with signs being like, you're all going to hell. And it's so weird because whenever we went on Friday, and there wasn't that many of them. There was literally like 5 or less of them standing there. And usually it's like 20. And it was so funny, the things that they were talking about, because you're like, all right, why would liking Comic-Con make me go to hell? So it was nice to hear their perspective. They were yelling, saying, you guys look ridiculous. You're dressed up like Halloween's come early. And I was like, okay, so we should burn for that one. And then this made the crowd cheer at them, because they said, I bet you all smoke marijuana. And everyone was like, woo!
Yeah, that's
and
funny.
They follow that up with, yeah, I bet you all smoke dope too. And we're like, that's the same thing. And then we passed by them again later and someone else was talking. And they're like making fun of people there by saying, you read Comic-Cons and or comic books and feel inspired. And I'm like, oh, what a sick burn saying that we feel inspired. Imagine.
It's like, wow.
It's weird. They're like really reaching for stuff to be mad about when it's just people dressing up who like books. It was pretty funny because like usually they're like more yelling like homophobic shit. This year they were like, all right, we really need to double down on the comic thing.
Yeah.
It's pretty strange. They're
annoying.
It literally sounded like someone messing with us, because I'm like, who screams, you guys all smoke marijuana? I'm like, you live in California, bro. Duh.
Yeah, you. What do you mean you don't?
Yeah. Yeah, they probably do.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say it was funny because we got there and we walked through there where they usually are, like by the gas lamp.
Yeah.
Like, sign.
The entrance to the gas lamp corridor.
Yeah, they're usually always right there.
Yes.
And yeah, we walked through there when we first got there, and then we walked through there again, like when we were like basically done. And the second time we walked around, they actually like kicked them out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good. Finally.
I was like, that's dope. Well, and it was great. I think there was a big discussion or something, because when we first got there, we saw like this someone dressed up in cosplay, and like when we came back again, they were still there.
Oh.
And basically just cheering that they find the cops like finally like kicked them out.
They must have taken it too far, because they've said some like fucked shit and not gotten kicked out. Yeah. I wonder what they did.
I know. We just saw the end of it when they were like literally walking away, and like the person and like their group were like cheering.
I do not want to know what they said to finally get kicked out of Comic Con. They're there every single year.
Yeah.
I've never seen them get kicked out before.
Yeah, me neither. I was like,
technically,
what?
Like, I mean, I think they might have to have a permit, but they're allowed to do it. It's just fucking douchey. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Comic-Con was fun. Even that part was almost fun because there were so few of them and they just sounded like they were memeing. So I was like, oh, it's like stand-up comedy almost. And then other than that, the stream yesterday, I got somebody fucking gifted me 60 subs.
Oh, wow.
Which means that they spent like $300. I only get 150 of it because Jeff Bezos needs half of it. But still, still fucking hype, which it got me over my sub goal of 250. It's the most we've had now, which means I'm finally going to get an OSRS tattoo. That was what my sub goal was, to get a tattoo. So it's gonna be my first time getting a tattoo since like last September. I've already emailed the artist that I used to go to and been like, long time no talk. Anyway, see me immediately.
That's I'm so excited. Dope.
Yeah, I'm gonna get this creature in the game, and it's a sheep, but it's actually like you could see two penguins' bottom half sticking out under because it's two penguins in disguise as a sheep. But I was asking if he could do like maybe like watercolor and like fluffier looking or something to make it look cuter. It's gonna be a very on brand tattoo for me. A fake sheep with two penguins sticking out from underneath. Sounds cool, like something I'd get. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
And then also today, I found out that we did get paid out for that Factor sponsorship. So I got $4,000.
Nice.
I'm being so careful. I'm like, I don't want to buy anything ever again because I know this money's gonna run out way faster than it should.
That's really good, though. I'm glad it wasn't a scam, you know?
I know. We were talking about the car. We have no idea who ordered, why they ordered so much. I think it was just, like, some rich person who goes and does that. Because, I mean, if I was rich, I'd probably just go to people's streams and, like, buy a bunch of shit. Be like, all right, here you go. And never say anything. Kind of seems like it'd be fun.
Yeah, that I would do that. That's yeah, cool.
Like a stream Santa Claus. But, yeah, so less stress now. I mean, obviously, half that money is probably going to go back to taxes next year, but we're not thinking about that currently. Not at all. It's still super exciting. And yeah, that was all my big news this week. Was mostly just stream stuff.
That's cool, though. I'm happy for you.
Memes. Thank you. But yeah, other than that, I think that's about it. I mean, now that we got paid that too, I think that means I could finally, hopefully, book the ticket to Amsterdam for later this year. It's going to be really funny if we don't like it. Hopefully we like it. That would suck. I'd be like, shit, Copenhagen next year? I don't know. We don't have a second choice right now, but it's exciting. It's making me feel way more hopeful because yesterday I was feeling very stressed. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what to do for money. So the fact that somebody came and just gifted that much money to us yesterday, I'm like, okay, cool. I am doing a good job.
That's awesome.
I did have to ban somebody who's been in our chat for several months, though.
Why?
Because we were talking. There's this other like girl that streams. Say girl, she's like my age or a little older. This woman that streams. And she used to stream Old School RuneScape. She hasn't been as much. And her fiance is like a very popular streamer for Old School RuneScape. I think that they were both streaming before they met. But he like proposed to her on stream and everything. They're like very into it. It's pretty cute. And she's like kind of my friend on Twitch. Like we'll go and hang out each other's chats and stuff and like raid each other sometimes. And she just said she was lurking. And this dude in the chat was like, oh, is she still dating that guy? And I was like, oh, yeah, they're engaged. They're getting married later this year. Because he said that he was watching her stream and she had a lot of viewers. And he was like, oh, okay, so that's why she has so many viewers right now, because she's still with him. And I was like, the fuck? And it bugged me. She even said something about how it was rude. And, like, her fiance showed up and was, like, joking, like, oh, her protection's here or something. Like, who's being mean? And I didn't do anything about it because I'm not good at confrontation. But I told Robert about it. And Robert was like, yeah, fuck that guy, and banned him. But he ended up apologizing. So we let him back on. And tell me why. He kept being so fucking weird in the chat. He said, like, multiple times, like, oh, now that I'm free, like, I'm not going to talk as much anymore. It won't happen again. And I'm like, dude, just be normal, please. Just stop. It's fine. You apologize. Let's move on. He went and on four of our YouTube podcast episodes commented saying, make sure that you don't say anything about, and then it's the girl that he was talking shit about. Otherwise, they're going to ban you. This used to be, like, an open-minded stream, but not anymore. Like, be expecting your bans and shit like that. And so we just rebanned him on everything this morning. And I'm like, you literally don't understand what happened, do you? It's not that, like, you're being mean. It's that you're saying the only reason she's getting views is because she's in a relationship with this other guy.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah. He's just fucking weird. It was just sexist and gross. And we gave him a second chance and he blew it real fast. But yeah, okay. That is the last of my stuff. That was the drama happening last night. I was getting very annoyed. I saw the comments whenever I was still streaming and I was, like, playing this mini game in RuneScape and I stopped and I was like, I wasn't telling the stream what was happening because I was, like, processing it for a second. I was like, bro, I'm fucking annoyed as shit right now. But it's all figured out at least. Anyway, shall I get to my story?
I think so. I don't have anything else.
Okay. My story can be a little graphic at time, just so you guys know. Mr. Cruel, the person I'm talking about, he was a serial child rapist. So, oh, yeah, very disturbing. Cruel. But yeah, just a forewarning for that. So, Mr. Cruel was a suspected murderer and serial rapist whose crimes took place in the late 1980s and early 1990s in Australia. His known crimes began on August 22nd, 1987, in Lower Plenty, a suburb in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. A man wearing a balaclava broke into a family home after removing a window pane in the lounge room. He was armed with a hunting knife and a handgun. He snuck his way into the parents' room, forcing them to lie on their stomachs as he gagged them and tied their hands and feet using knots that later they thought typically would be used by sailors and those who are used to securing big loads. After putting surgical tape over their eyes, he forced the parents into their bedroom wardrobe. He next went to their son's room, who he blindfolded and gagged before tying him to his bed. While all the other members of the family were incapacitated, Mr. Cruel headed to the real target of his attack, their 11-year-old daughter. Sorry, everyone, like I said, graphic. Over the next 2 hours, he raped the girl, even taking a break in the middle of assaulting her to go and make himself a meal before cutting their phone lines and making his escape. And with him, he took a box of classical records and a coat that he'd stolen. After reporting the attack to the police, they learned that during the home invasion, the girl had heard him make a call from inside the home to an unknown number. And while on the phone, he seemed to threaten another family, telling someone that he called Bozo, and that they should, like, move and take their children or else they'd be next and they'd be in danger. After checking phone records, though, it was revealed that he had actually been faking this call. He had not called anyone. This marked the beginning of a series of red herrings set up by Mr. Cruel to create false leads and avoid capture. When the daily tabloid newspaper The Sun reported on this case, they gave the attacker the nickname Mr. Cruel after police described the rapist as someone super cool and super cruel. And I'm assuming that they mean cool as in cold, not, like, actually cool here. Mr. Cruel's next known attack was on the Wills family on December 27th, 1988, in Ringwood, another Melbourne suburb. This time, he broke into their house at around 5:20 a.m., wearing a blue ski mask, dark overalls, and armed with a handgun. Heading to the parents' bedroom, he put a gun to John Wills and told his wife Julie to stop screaming before asking if he was going to be a hero. He forced the two face down on their bed and tied them with copper wire and gagged them before taking $35. I should say that later on, like, whenever police talked to the parents, they did, like, tell the dad, like, if you tried to do something, we're pretty sure he would have just killed your entire family and, like, staged it to look like a murder-suicide. Mr. Krull took a brief pause to cut the home's telephone cable before heading to the bedroom where the four Wills daughters, aged between 5 and 10, slept. He walked up to the 10-year-old victim and whispered her name, which I've decided to not include, even though they literally have her name and picture everywhere. She was just a kid, and, like, you know who she was. It's kind of crazy. Police suspect that he may have previously read her name several months before when the family had been in the newspaper following a house fire. He then took the girl out of her bed, bound her, and put a small ball in her mouth before taping it and blindfolding her so she couldn't make any noise or see anything. He grabbed a few items belonging to her and abducted her. It took about 15 minutes for the Wills' parents to escape their bonds, and when they did, they immediately ran to check on their daughters, but were terrified to find one of them missing. After finding that their phone line was cut, they ran to a neighbor's home and banged on the door to get their attention and call the police. The girl's father continued to run around the block looking for his missing child, but to no avail. 18 hours later, a woman found the girl standing on a street corner around midnight, wearing a man's shirt and wrapped in green trash bags. She calmly told the woman her name and said, "I was taken from home early this morning. A man left me here and told me to go and ring home." The woman noted that the 10-year-old was incredibly brave, saying, quote, "She's rather bright, really. I was quite surprised. I thought she would have been a bit worse for wear, but she was really good. I just brought her home and gave her a drink, and she was quite happy." The woman contacted the girl's parents, and she was soon reunited with her family. Speaking to the police about her ordeal, she said that immediately following the abduction, during which she was blindfolded the entire 18 hours, the man drove her around for a while before taking her to a home or apartment where he then sexually assaulted her. His means of restraining the child was by shackling her to what she thought was like a detention bed and using a rough-built neck brace. One detail of the house she was able to find out was that it sounded like there were low-flying planes flying over the home. She also said that her attacker could be gruff at times, but for the most part, he was pretty quietly spoken. He even gave her a glass of milk and a Vegemite sandwich, and later gave her some lemonade. Before releasing her, the girl's attacker gave her a thorough bath, clipped her nails and toenails, and brushed and flossed her teeth to get rid of any forensic evidence. She was then made to stand in a large plastic garbage bag, which Mr. Krull taped to her shoulders. He then put another trash bag over her head and taped it to her body before cutting a hole for her face. Mr. Krull drove her towards her home before stopping, lifting her over the fence and into a schoolyard, and telling her to walk to a nearby house with a light on. As she heard his car driving off, she began to walk towards the house, but the gravel was cutting her feet because she was barefoot, so she changed direction, hence why she was found on this random street corner. Following the attack, the Wills family for months slept together in the lounge room, installed a security system, and they accepted the donation of a golden retriever for added protection. But thankfully, they never heard from Mr. Krull again. On July 3rd, 1990, Mr. Krull broke into the Linus rented home in the suburbs of Canterbury around 11:30 p.m., following his now usual MO of holding a gun and a knife and wearing a balaclava. I don't know if I'm pronouncing their last name correctly, I should say. The Linus parents were actually at a farewell party at this time, as their family was from and was soon going to be returning to England, leaving their two daughters, 13 and 15, home alone. Shaking the two girls awake, the older girl was tied up and left on her bed while the younger was taken into another room and told to grab her school uniform. Mr. Krull told the older sister that the youngest Linus child would be released unhurt if their father, who made pretty good money, paid a ransom fee of $25,000.
Sheesh.
Leaving the home with the blindfolded girl in tow, Mr. Krull used the Linus rental car to drive the pair about half a mile away before walking a short walk and putting the girl into a second car. She later recalled that a blanket was put on top of her head and she was shoved under the dashboard for what she estimated to be about a 45-minute drive to a second place. 20 minutes after the abduction of their youngest daughter, the Linus parents arrived home to find their car missing and their front door open. Hurrying inside, they found that they had one child bound on her bed and the other was missing. 36 hours after the girl's abduction, Mr. Linus spoke in a press conference and told the public how he was willing to pay the ransom and begged that the kidnapper call him and please return his daughter. He said that he believed Australia had been safer than England, hence why he allowed the two girls to be home alone. The family had actually been in Australia for like the past 3-ish years following a work transfer, but they were due to return to London literally that weekend. And the night that she was abducted was actually the final night that she was even spending in that home. And I'm not sure if that's a coincidence or if he knew that, and that's why he chose that night to attack. The next day, around 50 hours after kidnapping the girl, Mr. Cruel released her around 2 a.m. by an electricity substation about 3 miles from home. She was fully dressed and wrapped in a blanket, but bound and blindfolded still. The day she was released was her 14th birthday. Yeah. And she, too, like the victim before, she was blindfolded the entire 50 hours that she was missing. That's so disorienting.
Yeah, I was like, imagine.
I literally cannot. While speaking to police, the girl told them how Mr. Cruel had escaped with her to a second location and informed them while they had been walking for several minutes to the other car originally, he had his arm around her shoulder with his head close to hers, making her realize that he wasn't that much taller than her and he was probably around 5'7 or 5'8. And she also was of the impression that his hair may have been reddish brown. Not sure what made her think that, though. While at the second home, the victim said that while she was blindfolded and bound, she was not actually threatened with violence. She was given food and drinks and described her attacker as being affectionate and chummy, saying that he called her Missy during fantasy games they'd play with her and told her that he would release her after 50 hours, something that he ended up doing. Despite him, like, trying to act all friendly, like, don't get twisted, he did still sexually abuse her throughout this multiple-day ordeal, again shackling her to the bed with the neck brace, as he did with his previous victim. Before releasing the girl, she'd been walked around for a few minutes by Mr. Cruel, though she still couldn't see anything. He made her sit down with her head between her legs as he made his escape. Realizing her captor was finally gone, she was able to remove her blindfold and find a home to get help and be reunited with her family. The girl told police about something odd that her attacker did. While she was restrained in the bedroom, he would go into another room and begin talking aloud as though to someone else. Perhaps trying to trick her into telling the police he had an accomplice, she noticed that nobody ever responded and caught on that this was likely just another red herring. Months after the abduction, now back in England, the girl spoke again to police and told them another bit of information. Just like the victim before her, she had heard low-flying planes above her abductor's home. Following these abductions, police began an Operation Challenge to try and find Mr. Cruel before he could strike again. But following no leads, they had to scale down the operation on April 12, 1991. One day later, on April 13, 1991, a man believed to be Mr. Cruel broke into a home in the Templestowe suburb of Melbourne around 8:40 p.m. That night, the Chans had left their 3 daughters at home, with 13-year-old Carmen, who attended the same school as the Canterbury victim, watching over her younger sisters as their parents worked at their family restaurant. The girls, who were on school holiday at the time, had been hanging out in Carmen's room watching a documentary on Marilyn Monroe. Carmen, with her next oldest sister, left the room during commercial to head into the kitchen and make some food when they were surprised by a man wearing a green-gray tracksuit and a balaclava, armed with a knife. He grabbed the girls by their hair and told them that he only wanted money and wouldn't hurt them, before forcing the two younger Chan girls into Carmen's wardrobe and pushing a bed in front of it to keep them stuck. He'd kept Carmen out, claiming that he needed to keep her out so she could help show him where the money was. The two younger girls struggled for several minutes to escape the wardrobe, but by the time they did, the intruder was gone along with their sister. Terrified, they called their father at the restaurant, who in turn called the police. When police arrived, they already felt that the case was bearing similarities to Mr. Cruel's other victims. They saw that on Mrs. Chan's parked car, there was a note left which said in large bold letters, "Payback, Asian drug dealer, more to come." However, after looking into the family's background, it was decided that this had just been another distraction by the abductor. Police dogs tracked Carmen's scent past Mrs. Chan's car, across the garden tennis court, through a gate, and onto a street before the scent was lost about 300 meters away. Mrs. Chan spoke on TV begging for her daughter to return home, and a few days after her kidnapping, the Chans posted an encrypted letter to the local newspaper, using a cipher that they felt certain Carmen would be able to decrypt. This letter offered $300,000 in exchange for the safe return of their daughter. Unfortunately, they received no response. Police believe that, like Mr. Cruel's other victims, Carmen would be released within a few days of her abduction, but she wasn't. A massive manhunt known as Operation Spectrum was formed to investigate her abduction and work alongside the Operation Challenge investigations. The following searches cost millions of dollars and took tens of thousands of man hours by police and volunteers searching for the little girl. The search for Carmen ended nearly 1 year after she'd been abducted, on April 9, 1992, when a man walking his dog in the nearby Thomastown found what looked like a human skull in some landfill. Over the next day, police were able to excavate most of a skeleton, which eventually was confirmed to be that of Carmen Chan. Due to damage to her skull, it was clear that she had been shot 3 times in the head, execution style.
Jesus.
Police believed her body had been there for around 12 months, meaning that she'd been killed not long after she was taken. It's theorized that Carmen was killed because she either took off her abductor's mask or she was somehow able to recognize him. Her own mom, like, said that Carmen was stubborn and definitely would have put up a fight against her attacker, perhaps leading to her learning too much information about him. To add even more credibility to this possibility, supposedly Mr. Cruel had warned an earlier victim to not try and look at his face, as his freedom is more important than her life. So we already know he would be willing to kill to keep his identity a secret. Though I did go over the most likely attacks by Mr. Cruel and his suspected murder of Carmen, police have said he could be the perpetrator in at least a dozen attacks. These victims were mostly young girls between the ages of 10 and 14, but other possible victims include a 14-year-old boy and adult women. The multiple attacks and the murder of Carmen Chan struck fear into families all over Melbourne. One journalist remembered the night that Carmen had gone missing, as she'd been around the same age and had also been staying up that night enjoying her school break. She wrote that, "My parents, like many others, had moved to the suburbs in the early 1980s to ensure their kids would get the best possible upbringing. Serples Road, where Carmen lived, looks very much like the streets on which I learned to ride my bike. But Carmen's disappearance sparked a fear in the hearts of the children and parents around me as the police madly hunted a man known simply as Mr. Cruel. It ended the childish frivolity of the April school holidays because her parents felt they could not afford to let us out." Over time, the Spectrum Task Force investigated many leads. For example, one of the victims taken to Mr. Cruel's home, I'm not sure which one, which is why I haven't included this yet, reportedly counted the second she'd been in his car and how many steps she took to get into the home, which is like fucking smart as shit. And paired with the fact that two victims had heard planes above the house, led to police narrowing in on a large area near an airport where they checked out about 30,000 homes, but were unable to successfully identify any as being the house used by Mr. Cruel. Over the course of the investigation, detectives questioned around 150 men who were subscribed to mail-order child porn and about the abductions, but as far as I can tell, no prime suspect was determined. All in all, the task force investigated more than 27,000 potential suspects and collected tens of thousands of tips before officially being shelved in 1994. Though his victims were blindfolded while in his home, they were able to catch glimpses underneath their blindfolds, leading to the knowledge that the homes the girls were taken to had white walls, beige carpets, and salmon-colored curtains. The police didn't publicly reveal this until much, much later on. One of the girls had seen a tripod with a camera on it in front of the bed that she was restrained to. She was unable to tell if it was for videos or still images, but this seemed to confirm the belief that Mr. Cruel had been creating his own child pornography to keep as a trophy after his crimes. Police believe if he's still alive at the time of that announcement, he would have kept the tapes and pictures he took of his victims, saying that these items will have had a great personal significance to him. He may have possibly still collected or swapped child pornography with others, and they seem certain that he definitely still got child pornography from the internet and may have even talked to children in online chat rooms. An official profile was eventually done on Mr. Cruel. According to this, it was believed that he chose his victims and would stake them out for weeks or even months before attacking them to learn about their habits and daily routines. That's why I was kind of thinking that that one victim, where it was her last night in the house, I feel like he probably knew that the family had a goodbye dinner and he was like, all right, this is my only chance.
True.
It's also stated that he likely would not fit the normal stereotype of a child molester, as it's unusual for them to stop committing crimes once they've begun, and even more rare for them to shoot their victims. It's theorized by police that Mr. Cruel may have worked in the education system, as most of the victims were attacked during school holidays, with him saying that, quote, the offender has an intense interest in children, especially children in the age group he's assaulting. He'll spend a great deal of time with these children, what appears to be selfless dedication to students. This apparent dedication may well have earned him recognition and awards, for example, Teacher of the Year, Coach of the Year, Exceptional Volunteer, etc. He's a functional individual, one with steady employment, is generally regarded as a good neighbor, polite, quiet, somewhat introverted, but may be involved in certain community-minded projects. Mr. Cruel was probably an Australian man between 35 and his late 40s, of slight build, with sandy or ginger hair and a clean-shaven face. He would have been soft-spoken and quite caring in his own monstrous way. He'd have a partner, it's likely they would know about his sexual dysfunctions, and likely would have to act out a certain role to help him reach sexual gratification, such as dressing as a schoolgirl. In 2010, the Apollo Task Force was established by police, following substantial new intelligence. Unfortunately, this task force closed just a couple years later when it was found out that the information wasn't credible, therefore ruling out their suspect. In 2016, 25 years after Carmen Chain's abduction and murder, the reward for information closing her case was increased from $100,000 to $1 million. That same year, the Herald Sun published an article claiming that, at the time of its shelving, the Spectrum Task Force had found seven suspects who they'd been unable to eliminate. It's unknown where Mr. Cruel is today, whether he's in jail in another country, if he stopped his crimes through therapy or drugs, or if he's died. One theory by the Spectrum Task Force is that Mr. Cruel had been one of the men that they interviewed during the investigation, and this questioning had scared him into stopping his attacks. Anyone with information on Mr. Cruel and his crime should call Crime Stoppers Australia at 1-800-333-000. But yeah, that is the story of Mr. Cruel.
He definitely was cruel.
Yeah, you could say that.
So yeah, I'm going to talk about the Flat Tire Murders.
Okay.
The Flat Tire Murders were a series of unsolved murders in Broward and Miami-Dade counties, Florida. They occurred between February 1975 and January 1976. Almost a whole year.
Yeah.
But yeah, the name originated from the investigators' belief that when the offender committed his first two known murders, he had deflated the tires of the victim's cars.
That's so fucking scary.
Mm-hmm. The list of the suspected victims ultimately included 12 girls and women found drowned in the intracoastal waterway within a short distance of each other.
What the fuck? I feel like it's very rare to hear about, like, drowning murders.
Right?
Yeah.
Some forensic experts have questioned whether a single offender was responsible for all the murders, while others have proclaimed that the murderer might have killed more than 30 women in multiple states.
Jesus.
Alright, but the first one murdered was Ronnie Gorlin. She was 27. She was a respiratory therapist. In the early afternoon of July 22nd, she stopped at the Asthmatic Children's Foundation in North Miami Beach to catch up with some of her old co-workers. She was a lifelong resident of South Florida. She had been living with her fiancé in Pennsylvania for about a year and returned to Hallandale to visit her parents for a few weeks while she planned her upcoming wedding. After gleefully telling her coworkers about her wedding plans, she said she was going to pass by the 163rd Street Shopping Center before heading to Parkway General Hospital at 2 p.m. to see her mother, who was being treated for a stomach bug. Ronnie never showed up to the hospital. That night, a mall security guard called North Miami Beach Police to have her rental car towed after he found it abandoned with a flat tire.
Ugh.
And I guess it was also, like, blocking traffic.
Oh, they left in, like, a very noticeable place.
Yeah. The next morning, a surveying crew stumbled across her nude body floating in the Graham Canal in the northwest Miami-Dade County. An autopsy performed by Dr. Ronald Wright, then the county's deputy chief medical examiner, revealed that she was raped and sexually mutilated before drowning in the canal.
Before?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
So, yeah, basically all of them were, you know, assaulted and stuff, and almost all of them drowned.
Jesus Christ.
Also, like, she was found in the nude, besides, I think she had a single sandal on.
Fuck, dude.
The second victim was Elise Rapp. She was a 21-year-old New York native who moved to the Miami area for work in June of 1975. She had headed out to the shopping mall, the Hollywood Mall. The next morning, a man grading a dirt road spotted Elise's body floating in the Graham Canal, just 10 blocks from where Ronnie's body was found a week before.
Only a week after? Fuck.
Yeah, literally, I think it was like literally one more day after. It was 8 days, I think.
Jesus.
She was wearing only a gold chain necklace bearing the Hebrew symbol for life. She had been sexually assaulted before she was struck over the head and drowned in the canal. The medical examiner noted that she was sexually mutilated in a very similar but reportedly more vicious way than Ronnie was.
Mm.
Later that night, her car was also found abandoned in the parking lot of Sears at the Hollywood Mall. One of the tires was also flat.
Fuck, dude.
In both of these cases, the killer had chosen young women who traveled in cars by themselves. In their absence, he had deflated their vehicle's tires, after which he waited for them to return and then offered to fix their tires, presenting himself as a Good Samaritan. After the discovery of Ronnie and Elise's bodies, the police first suggested that there was a serial killer active in two counties. According to them, a total of 12 young women were killed in the South might have been victims of the same offender. They basically connected the first two, Elise and Ronnie, just because of the similarity between the flat tire and stuff. And they believe these other 12 are also victims, and then some of them happened before and some of them happened after.
They'd already been active and they just didn't even fucking realize.
Yeah, I think it took them a while to connect the dots.
Yeah.
But the third was Judith Ann Oesterling. She was 20 years old from Indiana. She went missing on February 1st of 1975 from the Miami-Dade County after returning home from her job at a massage parlor. 2 days later, her body was found in the canal bordering Broward and Miami-Dade. The fourth victim was 17-year-old Arietta Marie Rini Tinker. She was dropped off by her husband at the Hippopotamus Lounge on Hollywood Beach at around 1 p.m. on April 9th, 1975. He asked her if she wanted a ride home, but she declined, saying she would find her way back. She was reportedly last seen at Loom's restaurant near Young Circle, a little over half a mile from her home. She was never seen alive again. 3 days later, her body was found floating in the Snake Creek Canal about half a mile east of the Highway 27 in Miramar, just north of the Dade-Broward line. Was around the same area where they found Judith, just like 3 months before.
Fuck, dude. What, I'm like, can you guys just hang out next to all the water?
Please? Right? Reports differ as to whether she was discovered by an off-duty police officer riding his bike or four Miami teens who were out on a fishing trip. I'm not sure why, like...
Hopefully not the fucking teens. That's traumatizing.
Right? For real. But yeah, Arietta was believed to have drowned, and although there were no obvious signs of foul play, detectives suspected she was murdered because they could not explain how else she would wind up dead so far away without her car.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth victim was Barbara Davis Stevens. She was a 21-year-old from Southwest Miami. She left her parents' home at around 7 p.m. on February 12, 1975, telling her father that she was going to visit a friend in the Coral Gables. On the way there, she stopped by a Gold Triangle store across from the Dadeland Mall. She bought a couple of rock and roll records and disappeared. The next afternoon, a concerned coworker found her Camaro abandoned in the parking lot of the Gold Triangle, with doors unlocked, keys in the ignition, and traces of blood on the steering wheel. A little over a week later, on February 20th, Barbara's body was discovered in a patch of woods behind a grocery store at the corner of Southwest 87th Avenue and Sunset Drive. She was still wearing the same clothes she disappeared in, but her slacks were pulled down and one of her shoes was lying a short distance from her body. She had been stabbed multiple times in the abdomen. Blood, dust, and grass were also found in her Camaro, which led detectives to believe that the killer used her car to transport her body to the dump site before returning it to the Gold Triangle.
Why did they assume that this is connected? Is it a different stabbing?
I think just because it was basically the same M.O., just like mm-hmm. a woman alone.
Moving the car abandoned, yeah.
Yeah. Most of them, like, had their own car and stuff.
Okay.
And were just basically alone.
And what are the chances there being, like, a second predator going and killing young women, yeah.
And, like, this literally a county away. The sixth was Nancy Lee Fox. She was 19. According to Captain, I'm gonna butcher this, Elihu Ferries, Nancy moved to Fort Lauderdale in early 1975, hoping to get away from an unhappy love triangle involving her sister and a young man named William Moore Jr.
Oh, yikes.
I'm like, damn, that sucks.
Yeah.
She was last seen alive on the night of June 13th. Various newspaper articles say that she was hitchhiking, walking to the local laundromat, or had just left work because she felt ill, and was walking back to her apartment when she disappeared. 2 days later, her body was found floating in the canal parallel to Highway 27 in Broward County. She had been struck over the back of the head with a blunt object and choked before her body was thrown into the water. There were at least two suspects in Nancy's murder. The first was Walter Worth, a convicted rapist who abducted an 18-year-old Cheryl Ives from the laundromat just a mile from where Nancy's apartment was, and was only 24 hours after her body was found.
Yikes, fuck.
So they caught this guy basically kidnapping someone and assaulting.
Yeah, now they're like, okay, would she have been murdered?
Yeah, it was like not even 24 hours after Nancy's body was found.
It's terrifying.
But yeah, he slit Cheryl's throat with a razor blade when she tried to escape, but she survived and helped provide officers with information that led to his arrest shortly after the attack.
He slit her throat and she survived?
Yeah.
Fuck, that's terrifying.
I'm like, fuck. Imagine the gnarly scar she must have. In January 1976, the Miami Herald reported that there was a prime suspect in Nancy's case, a man who was involved in the love triangle with her. Although the article doesn't include his name, it is almost certainly a reference to William Moore Jr. It is unknown if either man is considered a suspect in her case, which remains unsolved.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the next is two, actually. Barbara Susan Schreiber and Belinda Darlene Zetterower. They were both 14.
Fuck.
Yeah. They left the Schreiber home in Hollywood on the evening of June 18th. They told Barbara's mother that they were going to spend the night at their friend Valerie's house. The next morning, a family out on a fishing trip found their bodies lying side by side along the canal parallel to Highway 27, approximately 4 miles north of Andytown, which I guess was an outpost for truckers and fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
Both had been shot with a large caliber bullet, likely a 45. And due to the large amount of blood at the scene, investigators believe both of them were killed on the spot. They were found fully clothed, and there are conflicting reports as to whether they were sexually assaulted. Some say they were, and others say they weren't. And one of the articles states that there was no conclusive evidence, but that one girl was found wearing her underwear backward. When detectives called Valerie, they learned that the girls never made plans to sleep over, and that they would often use this excuse when they wanted to go somewhere without their parents knowing. There are conflicting reports about the girls' exact movements that night, but newspaper accounts most commonly state that they visited another friend's house and were last seen near the intersection of Route 441 and Hollywood Boulevard, and allegedly were trying to catch a ride north so they could buy drugs.
Oh, so they might have gone picked up.
Yeah, at least that's what the Broward County investigators, like, allegedly say they,
mm-hmm.
I guess, found out or assume. The eighth is Robin Leslie Loesch. She was 14. On July 10th, when the family was vacationing from Fort Myers, they spotted an arm sticking out of the Highway 27 canal about 10 miles south of where Barbara, Darlene, and Nancy were found. The body was quickly identified as Robin Leslie Loesch. She had been reported missing by her parents just 2 days earlier when she failed to return home from summer classes at Stranahan High School. Her autopsy revealed that Robin had likely been drowned, but investigators sharply disagreed over whether she was a victim of a murder or an unfortunate accident. Unlike the other victims, I guess she was fully clothed.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it could have been, but like...
I mean, still, were the two girls that were shot?
Yes. It's like literally this damn canal is where he liked to hang out.
I know. How long is this canal? Like, can't you just have people hanging out at this fucking canal?
Right. Oh, yeah. Basically, from all these murders, they had their, like, profile.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they described him as a white male, aged 20 to 25, well-dressed, physically athletic and attractive, possibly married, likely very intelligent with an above-average IQ, and a sexual sadist. Using his charm, he won the trust of potential victims, which he would lure to his car. But yeah, after they released, like, the profile, they put out a reward of $1,000 for any information that would lead to his capture.
I wasn't expecting you to say such a young age, though. 23, 25? Right? It's younger than me.
Damn. When you put it like that.
Yeah, a serial killer younger than me.
According to Sergeant Edwin Carlstead of Sonoma County, California, the flat tire murderer was possibly responsible for an upwards of 30 murders across several states since the early 1970s, starting in California. After these killings abruptly ceased in December of 1973, 9 similar murders were recorded in Washington the following year, but stopped in September. And after that, another spurt of killings in which the perpetrator demonstrated a similar MO to the killer in California and Washington, occurred in Idaho, Utah, and Colorado.
Terrifying.
Mm-hmm. In most cases, the victims who were physically resembled each other were beaten and raped before death, with the killer stripping their bodies and throwing them into the canals, streams, or leaving them near embankments. A total of 35 such murders were recorded, which, according to this theory, were committed by the same man, but this has not been proven. There's two more victims. Mary Coppola, who was 15, and Marlene Annabelle, who was 27. I guess they, I don't know who this was. It was very unclear. It's confusing. Mm-hmm. But basically it says they had arrived in Fort Lauderdale from Pennsylvania on October 17th, 1975. And they rented a room for a 1 week stay at the Lauderdale Beach Club. And all it says is her body was strangled with a rope and was found by a motorcyclist 9 days later in a dump outside the city. But I'm not sure, like, for who that was, you know?
Yeah, they didn't go into even, like, who, which victim it was.
Yeah, I was, like, so confused at that part.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 12th and final supposed victim was 17-year-old Michelle Winters, whose body was found floating in the Snapper Creek in Pembroke Pines on January 11th, 1976. She was last seen in early January in Fort Lauderdale, with friends, basically her friends claiming that she had been depressed and planned to enlist in the Navy.
Oh.
Michelle's mother told police that her daughter had likely voluntarily entered her killer's car as she often preferred to hitchhike. Also, this kind of like shook me, but makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It has been suggested that the notorious serial killer, Ted Bundy, could have been the culprit, but so far no evidence has been recorded of him being present in Florida during this period.
Oh, that's fucking scary. Yeah, it does sound similar, right?
Right? Like, I was like, oh shit.
Ugh.
But to this day, all the murders remain unsolved.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this before.
Me either. But it does sound like very Ted Bundy. It could have been like a copycat, or not entirely, but you know what I mean?
Some of them could have been him and others not, though.
True.
Like the up to 30, they're unconfirmed.
Oh, yeah. Like in.
Yeah, probably not the 12.
Yeah, and not the 12 in Florida, but yeah.
Jesus Christ. I swear, what was up with the 70s? Was there something in the water that made everyone fucking serial killers? Does that mean there's a lot of serial killers now and we just don't realize?
Low key, probably.
Oh, I hate that. Ew. All right. Well, you got anything else to add?
I don't think so.
If anyone wants to email us, you can at thespookyshit.pod@gmail.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are spookyshit_pod, and our website is spookyshit-pod.com. Thank you all for listening, per usual. I think next week we're coming in with some creepypasta, a little bit of a break. Some fake horror stories for once instead of the real ones.
Some spooky stuff.
Yes. But thank you all for usual. And talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.